May it please the court, my name's Mary Lundquist and I represent the state of Alaska in this matter.
Teachers sprinkled throughout the auditorium had to shake a few sleeping students and shush some whispered gossip sessions, but overall the kids did a pretty good job paying attention as attorneys for the state, the U.S. government, and Central Council offered arguments on both sides of the matter.
In the Sands versus Parks case, this court looked at the congressional actions to determine whether there was a colorable claim to inherent jurisdiction by the tribe.
Okay, I'm going to try and simplify and summarize here, but keep in mind that this is a very complicated case, and I'm just barely scratching the surface. Basically, the U.S. government gave money to Central Council to set up a tribal child support program. The tribe started issuing child support orders and asked the state to enforce those orders. The state refused, arguing that the tribes don't have jurisdiction over child support. The tribe sued the state in Superior Court and won, and now the state has appealed that decision. Here's State Attorney Mary Lundquist again, arguing that tribes have limited jurisdiction.
They have some attributes of sovereignty over their land and their people. In an Indian country, tribes have a heightened interest in self-government that might extend to both members and non-members. But the U.S. Supreme Court has stated in the absence of tribal ownership, it is virtually conclusive of the absence of tribal civil jurisdiction.
So what that means is Alaska doesn't have much in the way of Indian country, which is reservations such as those down south. Metlakatla is the only reservation in the state. Because of that, the state argues that tribes in Alaska have less legal jurisdiction, especially over non-tribal members, than a tribe in the lower 48 has over people living within its borders. The tribe disagrees, at least on the question of child support. Here's Holly Handler of Alaska Legal Services, representing Tlingit and Haida. She argues that tribes already are allowed to decide child custody for members.
So if Central Council can decide where a child can live, who a child should live with, who a child can visit, we know that Central Council has the authority to terminate parental rights in children's cases. So the question here is whether Central Council's authority also includes the ability of Central Council to determine what amount of support is appropriate for a child to receive to meet their basic daily needs.
The U.S. government sent attorney Stacy Stoller to argue on the side of Tlingit and Haida.
We sought to participate here because we're greatly concerned that the state's blanket refusal to enforce any and all of the tribe's child support orders here interferes directly with the effective administration of the federal child support enforcement program. The U.S. agrees with the tribe that tribes retain inherent tribal sovereignty to determine the appropriate support for tribal children.
Attorneys on both sides were led through complicated discussions with the justices over subject matter jurisdiction versus personal jurisdiction. Basically, that's the difference between an issue and an individual. The concern is whether a tribal court has the power to establish how much child support a non-native parent must provide for a child who is a tribal member. Okay, so the case is interesting, but what's fun is that the students were paying attention, and they had questions when it was all over. There were two question sessions, one with just the attorneys and another with the Alaska Supreme Court. Here's one of the questions for the attorneys.
Hi, I'm Cody, and I have a question for...
For the state's attorney, Mary
yes.
Lundquist.
Why are you against this?
That's my question. Well, I mean...
It's not a question whether the state is against a tribe or against tribal members. It goes to the essential question that was presented in this case. It's a jurisdictional matter, and tribes have domestic dependent nations with limited sovereignty. And applying the test set out by the U.S. Supreme Court, this was our analysis.
When the Supreme Court returned for its question and answer session, a young woman asked Chief Justice Dana Fabe how her experience as a woman has affected her experience on the court. Fabe says everybody's individual life experience is valuable.
We try very hard to set aside our personal views about policy issues and decide the case only based on the facts and on the law, but my experiences as a woman are different in the sense that I'm a wife, I'm a mom, from my male colleagues.
Justice Craig Stowers broke in to point out that Fabe is the first female Alaska Supreme Court justice and the first female chief justice of the state's highest court. Ketchikan's district attorney, Ben Hoffmeister, is the one who encouraged the Alaska Supreme Court to consider Ketchikan for a Supreme Court live event. After the two-plus-hour program wrapped up, he said it went well, and he's pleased with the questions some of the students came up with. Hoffmeister says Supreme Court Live is a great outreach effort.
The Chief Justice said in the beginning that one of the big things they want is to be able to inspire kids to do things like become lawyers. And I don't know if you have that here, but I think at the very least you have kids getting interested in what the law is and how it impacts them. And I hope that maybe one or two, you know.
Supreme Court Live is a relatively new program, and this is the first time it's come to Ketchikan. The state's highest court has had similar events at high schools in Sitka and Barrow. The program started under former Chief Justice Walter Carpinetti, who retired a couple of years ago. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.